Hello, and welcome to the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. If you haven't listened and subscribed, please check out the newest shows from Walnut Grovecast, which are called Bonnet Heads and The Little House Book Club. They are available from Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or just visit walnutgrovecast.com for more information. As always, these podcasts are free of charge as well as commercial free, thanks to the following supporters: Leah Ciappino, Rhonda Ludwig, Margaret LaVisca, Elizabeth Vellamagna, Laura Solarin, Julia Schroeder, Leah Mitchell from the Retro TV Podcast, Chris Hessler from the VHS Rewind Podcast, Tanya Weber, Alicia Murphy, Jennifer Jones, Marissa Baker, Kelly Milkey from the Dr. Quincast Podcast, JJ Hurley, Robin Lee, Thoy Rodriguez, Matilda Smith Thompson, Angela Bowen from the Looking Back on My Wonder Years, a Wonder Years Podcast, Shannon Quinton, Rebecca Harris, Dana Wilkins, Chantel Dubois Nishiyama, Peyton England, Laura Furman, Gerald Lang from the OSI Files Podcast, Megan Parker, Chris Cooling from the Forgotten TV Podcast, Melissa Halfpint Gilbert, Teresa Trapp, Valerie Williams, The No Agenda Podcast, Sherry Benner, Lydia Kikuchi, Stacey Corrigan, Avira Dabas, Whitney Griggs, Julia Jin, Don Roberts, Max Duration, Aaron Wortman, Liz Serha, Brian S., Bobby Young, Kendi Gleason, Angie Zadava, Megan Eichner, Katie Bollinger, Jeannie Mitchell, Jeff Griffin, Dina Almanzo Butler, Julia Monin, Whitney Cole, Rebecca Frederick, Annie Quinn, Jill Stillman, Michelle Plug, Dottie Cashin, Suzanne Holland, Spunky Cheek, Stacey Keller, Matt Mercier, Cheyenne Hempton, Stephanie Carnes, Alicia Olin, Rachel Boren, and Jeannie Comer. Thank you all for your support. If you would like to support Walnut Grovecast, please visit patreon.com/walnutgrovecast. Without further delay, please enjoy the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. Walnut Grove is a place to be. If you're living in 1863, Walnut Grove is a place to be. If you're living in 1863, please come to the place to meet his family. I was homeless till I saw. Hello, this is Mark, and you are listening to Walnut Grovecast. I was waiting for my cue of bink with When Carrie Falls, but it was not in this version. Today, I have a very special guest. Her name is Jeannie Mitchell. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, all things considered. And how about you?
I'm doing great. We're getting ready to talk about our favorite show ever. We're heading back to 1981 this time around. Do you want to talk about the episode that we're covering today?
This episode is from season 8. It's the third episode in. It's called Growing Pains, and it's pretty much about friction between siblings and a very crowded house.
Yeah, very crowded house, which is, of course, the Little House, which is where it gets its name. It's little. October 19th, 1981, a little bit more than a week before Halloween. This has really very little to do with Halloween, except it's, again, something that could have been edited in later to have kind of a moment where it's a little bit creepy. But they just did not push it. This whole thing they could have had happen like a couple days before Halloween. And they're all like getting ready and they're talking about Halloween. Something happens and they end up in this scary place.
Yeah, somebody's costume gets destroyed.
No, they didn't bother. They just didn't bother. One thing, I don't know if people know about this. So we have several twins in the cast of Little House on the Prairie. And we have Rachel and Sydney Greenbush. Now, Rachel and Sydney Greenbush at this age, they play Carrie. They're older than Melissa Francis, who plays Cassandra. So we don't really need both of them anymore, yet they're both cast still. So legally speaking, we don't need them both. But at the same time, it's kind of like, how do you split them up? It didn't really occur to me until literally 5 minutes before we got on the call that they must have really just kept Rachel and Sydney working together because it was just part of the dynamic.
True, and it was probably for continuity reasons.
Well, but I mean, they're identical twins. You know, if you have just one.
Yes,
you
know. But which one do you say that you're fired?
Flip a coin. I don't know. It's one of those things, though. But it really goes right there to maybe a Michael Landon type of decision where it's like, oh, well, of course you guys are both going to be working here. We're a family. And I guarantee you that it wasn't even a conversation. It wasn't even – maybe they were concerned, but I guarantee Michael Landon was – he didn't even think about it. He was just like, of course you're both going to continue working on the show.
True.
But I just hadn't thought about it because, I mean, we have Melissa Francis and there's only one Melissa Francis. There's no sister.
True. And also he had at least two sets of siblings working on the show. Melissa and Jonathan Gilbert.
Yeah, but they aged out of this type of situation.
True.
You know, but at the same time, we have Wendy and Brenda on Turnbow. And, or Turnbull, I'm going to say Bal, and who played Baby Grace. And but they never really got to the age. I don't think they ever aged out of the period that legally you would need to be twins.
Yeah, and by the time their characters were written off the show, they were 5 years old and had made it very clear to their parents they didn't want to do this anymore.
Yeah, I mean, they still worked a little bit afterward and stuff like that. But, yeah, it just wasn't really in the cards. I don't think that they really – there was not much of an interest from their family's point of view or their point of view. Which is sad. I would have loved to see them in other productions. But, hey, we get to see them now, right?
True.
We see Wendy Lou Lee all the time.
Mm-hmm. And Wendy Lou Lee is an author in her own right. I have a Prairie Devotional on my mm-hmm. Kindle. I have yet to read it, though.
Oh, it's a wonderful book, and it's great because you can just flip to any page and just start reading. It's not like you have to start right from the beginning. You would love it, honestly. Just choose page 18, you know, and you're going to love it. I guarantee it. And I want to talk about your book. You wrote a book. Well, you're constantly writing, but let's get into the story. I'm going to come back to your writing, but I definitely want to hear what you're about your writing. And
God gives each of us different talents. He gave you the talent to create and record podcasts.
Yeah, I yabber on. That's my talent. I yabber on.
He gave my brother the gift of being able to argue anything, and now he's a very successful family attorney.
But here we go. We have a shot of Albert shaving. You know, babyface Albert is shaving. I don't know if we've ever seen anybody shave on the show, really. But I think that's the whole point.
Yeah, you know? And honestly, I doubt if he even has peach fuzz yet.
Maybe peach fuzz at best. 6 months in, he has a little peach fuzz.
Yeah.
But then I wonder if he has it now. He's in his 50s.
I did see him once on a on a show he was in his 20s, and at one point he did have a 5 o'clock shadow, so I think he is capable of growing facial hair.
Until he comes on this show, I'm going to say it's fake. Just kidding. I'm going to give Matthew Labrato a tough time until he comes on the show.
Yeah.
He'll make his way here.
Yeah, but thinking about it, he's got to be, what, 14 at this point?
Yeah, maybe 14.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think if my oldest nephew had to shave at that age. I know he does now.
Well, I'm going to play this clip, and let's hear what kind of banter is going on. The whole family, everybody's running around. It just seems very dangerous, actually. But
careful, you cut off your nose to spite your face.
Excuse me.
Hey.
I can't make this part right.
Yeah, well, come on around here, James. Come on. I'll help you with it.
Paul, can you help me?
In a minute, Carrie. Let me just finish with James here.
You don't have to snap at Carrie like that. She's not doing anything.
Well, it's still Cassandra. Almost finished.
Honey, is something burning?
The biscuits.
You burn the biscuits. It's like there is... so much going on in this house. It's probably like about 7 a.m. Yeah. There's just so much going on.
And poor Charles probably hasn't had his coffee yet, which is, I'm sure that's probably why he snapped Carrie.
It's very possible. Very possible. But he's a farmer. Doesn't he get up at 4?
Yeah, probably he's up before the sun. And yeah. But then again, maybe he still needed his coffee.
Yeah, we all do. We all do. So here we go. We're going to talk a little bit about the razor. The razor becomes a little bit of a focus of this episode.
Gosh, it's so much fun to shave like you and Pa.
Nah, not really. Especially when you cut yourself.
Pretty soon I can shave.
Here.
I do want to mention it's James. James is the person who, he's a couple years younger. He's probably 10, 11 years old. And Albert is like 14, maybe 15. And, you know, Mr. Maturity in this episode, actually.
Ma, called you, give
it to me. I won't hurt it.
This razor was a present from Pa. Don't want anything to happen to it.
Boys, come on now.
So you see him put it away. You know, he's doing a mature thing. Albert takes a lot of pride in his thing. We get a new angle. We get a shot of them sitting at the table, but the camera's pulled back so much further than I've ever seen it.
Had to get all those people one shot.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you do have at this table 7 people. You know, Baby Grace is in a high chair. But yeah, definitely a lot of people there. Definitely an interesting shot. They were definitely trying something new. Almanzo makes his way into the scene, bullies his way into things.
That is.
Whoa! Almanzo, morning.
Almanzo? That's weird. Who says that? Mr. Fancy Pants Charles says Almanzo.
Morning, Charles.
I hope you had breakfast, unless you like burnt biscuits.
Well, no, I had breakfast with Laura, thanks.
I didn't figure to see you till I got to the mill.
Well, I have this delivery for you.
Oh? Just the drawers? What for?
Mrs. Olson said Caroline wanted it.
So, this is really nice, I think. I mean, it appears to me that the Olsons had an extra chest of drawers, and they were giving it away for free.
I think Harriet was probably redecorating again.
You know, and can you blame her? I mean, she's using last year's wallpaper. I mean, there's a lot of new choices coming out of Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was uncharacteristically generous of her to give the chest of drawers to Caroline.
Yeah, it was definitely. It's hard to say which Harriet you get anyway. Sometimes you get the one who's just wonderful, and then you get the stingy one, and it's hard to say.
And then you get the one who deserves to get hit in the face with bread dough.
Yes, or yelled at by Percival.
Mm-hmm.
So Charles is talking about basically how there's no room for this chest of drawers, but the kids need it, and the house is just getting smaller and smaller. It really is. It's got to be a struggle. But at the same time, we love that the Ingalls are doing this. They're just opening up their home. They're like, look, we'll find a way. We'll just find a way. And that's why we love them, I think. And this, Charles talks a little bit about how easy it is to have so many kids in the house.
I don't know how you do it, Charles.
What's that?
Raising 5 youngins.
The more there is, the easier it gets.
Really?
Sure. You believe that? I got a bridge I want to sell you.
Womp womp. Oh, Charles. I'm the youngest of 5. So, I mean, there's such an age difference that it's the house is kind of empty by the time I was growing up, which is fine.
Yeah. Well, I know my youngest brother would understand because I'm the oldest of 4 and the only girl.
Mm-hmm.
The oldest of the boys behind me is 2.5 years younger than me. Then the next one is 3.5 years younger than me. And Clyde is 18 years younger than me.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a big difference.
Yeah, it's
a generational difference, yeah.
Yeah, but I never really thought about the age difference until the one day my aunt said to me, you know, you're old enough to be his mother.
Technically, yeah.
And I looked at her and said, gee, thanks. But I did use it on him once when we were at the state fair and he dragged me on every wild ride there was. And after we got off one and I was holding on to things to stay vertical, he laughed and said, you're acting like an old lady.
Oh, boy.
I was 33 at the time, and I just looked at him and said, I'm old enough to be your mother.
And that just shut him up.
It shut him up, and the next thing I knew, he was buying me a large lemonade.
There you go. A true gentleman.
He is. I have to say, he's a great guy.
But you can identify with this next scene probably a bit, where you want a little bit of privacy, and the younger sibling wants nothing but your attention. And so I'm going to play some of this. James is really looks up to Albert in a way that he doesn't have an older sibling. He was the older sibling, or is the older sibling in his dynamic. And it's cute, but I can understand why Albert is losing his patience.
Do you think Mrs. Wilder's going to give us a test today? Huh? Do you? Think she will?
That's what she said.
I didn't read mine. You think I'll get in trouble? Huh? Do you? I get so nervous when people get mad at me. Do you get nervous? Do you?
James, will you please be quiet? I really have to read this.
Can I be on your team for recess? I won't make an out. Please?
I bet he would make an out. He's the worst player on the team. No. James, no. Go play marbles with the girls.
You know, I'm watching this. I watch this scene, and they remind me very much of two of my nephews. And the age difference is even the same.
What are your nephews' names?
If
you don't mind mentioning.
William's the older one. He's 17 now. And James, yes, his name is James. He's 13. So, yeah, a few years ago, this probably would have been them, because I've heard them on occasion when they call me on the phone. James will go on and on and on about something, probably like his aunt, and all of a sudden I would hear William say, "Shut up, James." And here I was watching, and I was waiting for Albert's fist to kind of shoot out sideways.
No, but he's really patient with him, actually. He's just like, look, I got to get this done. Like, just shut up. He doesn't even say shut up like I would. Now we get gentle about it. They get to school and they're late. You know, we get this moment of like, oh, we're late. Oh, my God. And crazy hair Laura comes over to the restaurant where Ma's working. Ma's working pretty hard these days. I mean, raising Mary and Laura was a party in comparison to this. And Laura, I don't know. I don't know what Laura was hoping to accomplish here. Yeah, but here's the scene. But she's definitely has wild hair.
Good. Why aren't you at school?
Recess. I have to talk to you.
Oh, what about?
Well, it's not as your daughter. It's as your children's teacher.
They do something?
They were late twice last week, and now today.
Laura, I'm sorry. I do try.
And it would just be great if we got a shot of Ma, like, rolling her eyes. And I don't know. It just seems so not that big of a deal, but at the same time, I guess Laura's just trying to have such a finely tuned class, unlike Miss Beetle.
Yeah, and she's playing double duty as well. Mm-hmm. Not only are these her younger brothers and sisters, they're also her students.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a fine line she's treading.
Yeah, it is. And I don't know if I could imagine being in that position. But I think she handles it very well in this next scene. She just keeps them all after school. And she basically talks to them. And this is what she says.
Looking at you as your big sister, not your teacher. Ma and Pa have a lot to do. With five of you, there's more dirty dishes, more clothes to wash, more questions to answer. What I'm trying to say is they're going to need your help.
By the way, I just want to point out, we do get such an older Carrie, which is why I was thinking about the twins thing. Carrie, she's older than I think Laura was in the beginning.
I think so, too. She looks like, in this episode, she looks like she's maybe 9-10 years old. And Laura was 7 when this all started.
Yeah, I mean, I think we forget how young she was, because she really was such an advanced actress. And I don't know, it just, she was so little. But yeah, I mean, I look at Carrie and it's like, whoa, what happened here? Where's the little pudgy little girl who's like a foot and a half tall, who's like, I want to eat the da-da-da-da. You know, and it's like, what'd she say?
Yeah.
Now she's like a real little girl. So I think that's pretty pretty incredible when you jump from scene to scene. I mean, I'm from season to season. And you're watching season 2, next thing you know, you're in season 8.
Yeah, it's like with a lot of children. You turn your back for 1 minute, and next thing you know, they're 5 years older.
We never see that with Gracie. You know, it's like you look at Wendy Lou Lee as an adult, and you just don't, at least I don't see Grace Ingalls.
No, I don't either. She doesn't look very much as she did when she was.
Yeah, she was like when she was small. Cause she was so small, you know, she's so young. And, I just think it's really interesting when you're looking at some of these children growing up on screen right in front of us. And that's got to be really interesting to be one of those people. But
yeah.
But Laura goes on. She yabbers on and on and on.
You have to do more for yourselves. All right?
James is like, yeah, okay. Sure,
no.
Whatever.
You, sure, yeah. Can you let me out of here?
As you're-
It's like, can I get out of here? Because Albert said I can be on his team, you know?
Yeah, Albert's going somewhere interesting, and I want to follow him around and drive him bats.
well, before that, though, Laura does say, as your teacher, and this is what she throws down.
Your teacher, if you're late again, it's extra homework. Class dismissed.
Extra homework? Thanks a lot, James. I don't know why everybody's blaming James for it, really. Not really his fault.
No, I think it's a collective thing. It's like Laura said, there's a lot more souls in the house, and the older ones just, they have to help by doing what they can for themselves.
So it must be spring in the air, and this is like a spring love. Albert goes out and meets up with a very pretty little girl, young lady, and wants a little bit of alone time. So that's what this is all about. And James can't take a hint.
Forgot.
Oh, no, my sister just wanted to talk to us.
Maybe we can go riding.
Sure.
I ran on those beasts so fast, didn't I, Albert? Albert, does he have to come?
James, why don't you walk Karen and Cassandra home, huh?
I want to be with you.
James, you don't have to go everywhere I do. Now go on home.
I'll be real quiet. He's such a pest. Come on, Albert.
Yeah, come on, Albert. What a mean girl.
I have a little bit of trivia here to share.
Oh, excellent.
Jenny Soaps was played by an actress named Tricia Cast. And she and Jason Bateman, who played James, wound up on a sitcom sometime later called It's Your Move.
Oh, and, I remember that. It was like a chessboard in the beginning.
And they played brother and sister.
Oh, my goodness. I have to look back. I bet I know this actress then.
Yeah, so if Jenny thought that he was annoying then.
Yeah. That's funny. And he was in that series, Jason Bateman plays kind of like a smart aleck kid who's kind of street smart and always kind of, I think the basis is he lives with a divorced mom and he's always just kind of like coming up with scams and stuff. I remember it being a very funny show. That's very funny. Great.
Yeah. I think I watched it once or twice, but I don't remember it.
Mm-hmm. Sounds about right. Sounds like the kind of show I would watch. You know, it's like I watched the whole run. And you're like, eh, I saw one episode. So James swipes the razor and goes into the barn with a mirror, and he's playing shaving, which is just very dangerous with a straight razor. Doing anything with a straight razor is extremely dangerous. But he's having just a great old time, and he's in front of the mirror, he's just kind of goofing around.
Ho, ho, ho.
And it's a pretty visual thing. He goes and he's making believe he's shaving, and he drops the razor. And the cow stomps it.
Only a little house on the prairie would a razor get broken that way.
But I think it's the pearl handle that gets cracked. Right?
It was also, the blade was also damaged.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. This would not, you know, in a real world, it would be like, oh, this is fine because Ben is back. Nobody will ever notice. Actually, he should have just put back the broken razor. Do you notice also, Albert is pretty grumpy in this episode, in general?
Well, probably because he's 14 years old. He wants some time to himself to do 14-year-old boy things. And he's got this little kid tag.
Got to carry on, yeah.
Yeah, and trying to do everything he's doing because James thinks that his brother is just the greatest thing ever.
Yeah. And you know what he is? You know, it's his life. It's, you know, James has gone through a very traumatic experience losing his parents. Is, you know, and these wonderful people take them in and he wants to just hang out with the big boys. I get it. Cassandra? I'm sorry, go on.
I was going to say, I've seen it with older and younger siblings. I saw it with two of my brothers growing up. The third one came along when we were all teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it with my nephews. And there's also two young ladies who are daughters of a very good friend of mine. I've seen it with them too.
Yeah, it's a normal thing. I mean, it's just a coming of age type of situation. And so we do see Albert just being really grumpy and he's just all like a curmudgeon. So the one thing that I think that was a really nice little scene is Ma is giving Cassandra a drawer and she's like, you put your stuff in here and James will get his and James come down. And James is being very, very distant because he screwed up. He broke Albert's razor and he doesn't know what he's going to do. Pa says to Albert, help me carry this out to the barn. It's his chest because they need to make room for this dresser. And as they're outside, they have a little conversation about James.
Albert James was awful quiet at supper. You know if anything's bothering him?
Yeah, it's probably me.
You?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, I went over to Jenny Soap's house to fix her mare's halter. She didn't want James to come.
Did you tell her if James wasn't invited, you weren't interested in helping her?
No. Pa, I should be able to go somewhere without James tagging along.
I know. Gotta remember, this is an uncertain time for James right now. Still trying to get used to our family. Still trying to see where he fits in.
I know.
Hey, now you remember how you felt when you first came to live with us?
Afraid.
Right. So I think you know how James feels.
This would be very different advice if it was Mary and Laura, as a child, of course.
True.
Charles is all, I understand. I get it. But at the same, on the same note, Charles does get Albert to do the same thing. He gets him to do the right thing, but in a different way. So that's interesting. I hadn't really thought about that until just this moment.
Yeah, and Charles would know also what it's like to have brothers tagging along after you, because he was one of several children, and I know he had at least one older brother.
But does he talk? I mean, does that exist on the TV show? I don't think it does.
Well, we saw him with his brother Peter very early on, like season 3, when their mother passed away and Charles went to Wisconsin to look after his father.
It's just, it seems, you know, in the books, of course, we have all the brothers, and we have Hiram and George, but on the TV show, I don't know. I don't get a Charles Ingalls who has very many family issues outside of his own family, you know, his own, like the Caroline basis of family. We almost never hear him talk about any cousins or anything really, which is surprising because when you compare it to the books, very different.
Yeah, that may have also been Michael Landon's influence, because he was one of two children and he had a pretty rough home life growing up.
Yeah, I mean, he's been pretty open with how he's grown up and the struggles and all of that and what he had to overcome, which I think, you know, he definitely overcame quite a bit.
Yeah, and you can overcome that, but it's still going to color your outlook on things.
Of course, yeah. So the next day, breakfast is on the table. There's probably more bacon than a smorgasbord would have. There's more eggs. There's more food on this table.
Yes, but did the biscuits come out okay?
Well, for once, maybe. Maybe. I'm not saying yes. Maybe. So the baby bottom-faced Matthew Laborto is looking for his razor, and I love one particular line that comes out of his mouth in a moment.
There you go.
And that's Gracie, and she's just having the greatest time with Michael Landon. You know, you just see the genuine connection he has with children, and you know, it's just something you don't see now.
Yeah.
It's all manufactured when you watch television these days. Here, it just, you could just see it's organic. I think it is, anyway.
James, breakfast!
Come on. What's my razor? Have you seen Paul?
No, is it in there?
No. Mom, do you know where my razor is?
I don't know where it is. Come on, sit down.
Have you seen my razor?
No. James, Albert, please sit down.
Well, what am I going to do?
What are you going to do? That's the line. What are you talking about? You have no hair on your face.
Like, I was going to say, yeah, he could just skip shaving for a day.
Like, maybe. You're kind of LARPing to begin with. Like, you're just basically wasting, you know, shaving cream at this point. So, yeah.
Something else I noticed when he turned around to James and asked if he'd seen the razor, and James said no, Albert takes about a half step forward. Kind of like, are you sure?
Right. Well, and James is like, no, I certainly didn't break it. He may as well have said that. Such a guilty face.
Yeah, James looked, actually the look on his face kind of said, please don't hit me.
For breakfast, you can use my razor. Come on. These eggs, while they're hot.
Something happened to it. It didn't just disappear.
I don't want to use your crappy razor. Paw.
Well, I'm sure you'll find it. Here, have some eggs. I haven't said grace yet. Put your fork down. Can we fold our hands and bow our heads, please?
They have to fight to say grace. What is going on in the Ingalls house? What is happening?
Probably the same thing that goes on in my house. It's funny. My husband was the one who was very devout when we met. Now, I'm the one who's devout and he's not.
Mm-hmm.
We sit down to have a meal together. I bow my head to say grace. He bows his head to grab his fork. And I'll just look at him and say, honey, wouldn't you like to say grace first? And let me tell you, a gangster rapper has nothing on a man who's hungry but forced to say grace by his wife.
Well, if you go to a Seder, which goes on for hours, you know, I've been to Seders that go on for hours and everybody's reading and you're waiting and you're hoping for this one moment where you get to have something, anything, because you're starving. That's where you cannot believe how fast Hebrew can be read. It's like, whoa. It's like, slow it down, buddy. It's not your bar mitzvah. And it's just, I know exactly what you mean, though. It's like you just kind of, you get through it. You're like, bum, 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 let's eat. But then I've been to Seder's where it's like 45 minutes. And it's like, all right, let's just do the highlights. Let's get on with this.
Let's have the 4 cups of wine first.
That's always a good way to start a meal. Absolutely. On an empty stomach. Let's have wine on an empty stomach. So what a wonderful thing. They go into town. They take a wagon. They do a wagon talk. They go into town to the mercantile to get shoes. Everybody likes buying shoes. So here we go. And the last I heard, figures are a certain person's business. And I'm not sure who this is. But.
How do you feel?
Fine. All right, that's $13.88 with tax.
You sure it's that much?
Harriet hands him the paper like,
See for yourself?
That's right, $13.88 it is.
Figures are my business.
Surprised she didn't say, and I know that dirt is yours.
I'm also surprised the Caroline didn't say, and your business seems to be everybody else's business in Walnut Grove.
Yeah, well, I think this is one of those points where they can't afford to really kind of make a snip comment, right? Because they're wrong. I mean, not that they're wrong. It's just the figure is correct. Now, adjusted for inflation, $13.88 is $358. So if we're going to think about, you know, $350 for shoes, yeah, it's a lot of money to spend for a bunch of kids, especially when you're on a very tight budget.
Yes, and there's no Payless in Walnut Grove.
No, I think that the Fave is closed up in the 1870s, in the early 1870s. So it goes on.
Now, Mrs. Olson, I've only got $10.32. Carolyn, do you have any more money with you?
Charles, I gave you all I had the day before.
No idea shoes were going to cost so much. They've really gone up.
Let's see. It's $1.25.50. Still not enough, Charles.
Well, for a little interest fee, we can carry you.
So they really don't want to do this. Caroline's like, I don't want to pay that woman interest.
I can't blame her.
I would imagine that most people have to pay interest to the Olsons because everyone seems to have a credit line. This is like the first time I recall there being the mention of interest outside of Sprague. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, can you think of a time where, you know, interest is brought up?
The only other time I can remember is in Stone Soup with the heat wave and farmers having to open a credit line at the mercantile.
Mm, yeah, stuff like that. And of course, that's a newer episode. Newer, you know. Mm-hmm. New generation.
She must have just hit on the idea of interest.
Yeah, it's like, I could charge you money, which is, I think, a fair thing to do, personally. But it's, so we see James, and he's looking at these razors, and I'm sure he's thinking, I really want to buy one of these to replace Albert's razor that I demolished, or that the stupid cow demolished. But they do come up with an idea. What they need to do is tell Albert, you got to just hold off on your shoes, pal. You got to just kind of, just a little bit. So this is that. It's a little bit of a sad scene, I think. I think it kind of gives us an understanding of how mature, really, Albert is, and how sometimes he needs to sacrifice for the good of the others. So it can be kind of a little bit tough.
Albert?
Yeah?
I'm running a little short of cash today. Mind waiting a few days for the shoot?
Oh, no. That's all right.
I'm really sorry. It'll just be a few days.
No, it's all right. I understand.
And he does understand it. It just, you know, nobody wants to just not get something new, whenever, especially when everyone else is getting new.
True.
Well, you know, but it gives us, maybe it reminds us here that Albert's a pretty decent guy. It's just he's growing up. He's got a cute little girl who loves him and, you know, all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, that's one thing I've noticed with Albert. He never had a problem with getting a girl's attention.
Yeah. For the most part, yeah, I would have to agree with you.
He never had to chase a girl. They were always chasing him.
Yeah. Goodness knows what was going on when they moved into the city. Jeez.
Yeah, but I've heard that morphine can kind of put a damper on a young man's interest in the opposite gender.
Yeah, it's just like, hey, got any more morphine?
Yeah, but then again, morphine can also put a damper on a young man's interest in anything.
Yeah. Oh, morphine. Makes you scratch. So we're around the dinner table, and we're talking about figures. We're talking about a pretty decent amount of money that's about to come payable to Pa, which I was very surprised with. This amount of money.
The way I figured, Mr. Dobbs will owe me $122 when I make that delivery tomorrow.
$122? What? We're talking like serious money here. Adjusted for inflation, that's $3,100.
Not too shabby.
Now, maybe that's not all going to his pocket, but I'm sure.
Well, he did mention that some of it does belong to Almanzo.
But he can skim off the top. They have walls. We don't have walls, Caroline. And Albert needs shoes. They should pay for at least half of those. So we see in the background that Jason is walking towards the fire. James is walking towards the fire, Jason.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes a discovery that is very conveniently timed. Another thing is we got a little hint that we saw that there was a pearl white razor and a red razor in the display case at the Olsons.
Mm-hmm.
And when we saw it the second time, there was a missing one. Unless somebody ran in there buying one, I think James might have stolen it. What do you think?
I think that's a pretty safe bet, considering that right before it was missing from the display case, he was eyeing it rather intently.
If you look closely enough, I think he was drooling on it. It was a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, the corners of his mouth were a little damp.
I want some of I'll just take it. He's like muttering to himself like an insane person. Like,
Don't die.
But here he goes. He has some info.
Gotta be able to put some aside.
Yeah, well, part of it's Almanzo's.
My new shoes.
You will get your new shoes, Albert. Yeah. I won't forget.
Shut up about the shoes.
Quick, put some away. Hey, Albert, I found your razor.
What?
Yeah, I moved the wood box a little, and there it was.
Thanks.
Still has the price tag on it.
What'd I tell you? I knew it'd turn up.
I thought it was gone for sure. I'm sorry for thinking you took it, James.
And just in time, too. Look at this guy. He's growing a whole beard. Oh, jeez.
Just didn't...
Wait a second.
This isn't mine.
What are you talking about? Of course it's your razor.
No, it isn't. I had a bad nick on the blade. I had to be careful of it. Look for yourself.
Whomever this is, these days.
This is a brand new razor.
Jeannie, it's a brand new razor. How did this happen? Oh my god. The tension, you can cut it with a razor.
Where'd you get it, James? James, I asked you a question. Where did you get this razor?
I didn't mean it, Pa. I broke Albert's razor by mistake.
It's Albert, not Albert. What a lazy speaker.
What happens to kids' voices when they're nervous?
Albert.
I wanted to make it right, but...
Spit it out.
James, where did you get this razor? I want an answer now.
From the mercantile.
You stole it.
Now, do you recall there being a time where any of the kids ever stole anything from the mercantile? I'm trying to think. I don't know.
I think the closest was when Laura took Nellie's music box. But that wasn't from the mercantile. That was one of Nellie's personal possessions. Yeah, but really, the Ingalls children were not exactly known for bogarting things.
Yeah, I don't remember if this is a brand new type of scenario. And I think it is.
Wait a minute. This was before he became an Ingalls, but Albert was a rather skilled thief.
Oh, sure. I mean, he stole a lantern. But in Hero Township, I think outside of swiping morphine from Doc's heavily guarded case, I don't think anybody was really stealing anything.
No, and Albert was also, for the most part, stealing to survive. The lantern was a bit unusual, but it also showed that he had quite a bit of intelligence and that
sure.
he enjoyed.
He wasn't just stealing something to sell. Yeah, he was stealing something so that he could add to his lifestyle.
Exactly.
But speaking of Albert, he is a little bit he wants to kind of add to this very tense moment.
Mm-hmm.
Get up to your room. Get ready for bed. Go on now.
Albert makes this face of like, I'm so mad.
I knew he took it. You're going to get it now, James.
All right, that's enough, Albert.
But he broke my razor and he stole. Aren't you going to punish him?
I'm the parent here. I'll decide who gets punished. Why don't you go on outside and cool off?
It's not fair. I have to be understanding, but nobody has to understand me. I have to go without shoes. I have to let people break.
Talking to himself like a lunatic.
Actually, he's talking to himself like I do after trying to talk to my husband and then realizing he's not listening to a thing I say.
Oh.
And that's when I walk off saying, oh, great. All you have to do is worry about your job. I've got to handle my job and the house and this and that.
Well,
come to think of it, I don't think he's listening too much to that either.
Well, sit him down and straighten him out.
It's a good thing he's got his noise-canceling headphones on right now.
There you go. You could throw stuff at him. Throw raisins or something.
Well, I'm just thinking that it's a good thing because right now he can't hear what I'm saying about him.
Oh, I see. He won't throw raisins at you.
Once this is on the air, he's probably going to give me this look like, you had to say that? Yes,
you
I
you had
did.
To? Yeah, exactly. So Pa goes up to the loft. Pa doesn't want to climb up that loft. He just wants to go to bed. But here he wants to have a little chat with James.
All right, why'd you take Albert's razor in the first place?
I just wanted to try shaving. Like you and Albert.
You know that razor is special to Albert. He asked you not to play with it.
But I just did it.
Just did it. And then you stole. James, let me ask you something. Have I ever beaten you or given you any reason to be afraid of me?
Not till now.
No, sir.
And why in the name of heaven didn't you just come to me when this happened and tell me?
I don't know.
And you know what? This is, you're a dopey kid. You made a stupid decision. Charles is, I don't know, he's really treating James with kid gloves, but I think he's doing the right thing. He's giving him a real talking to and really kind of letting him know the severity of what he did and how it affects so many people. So I thought it was a decent little chat that he had with him. We have this moment with Charles and Albert, which I think is a little bit messed up with Pa says, but... you tell me what you think.
Sorry about the razor.
Sorry I didn't fix my razor. You shouldn't have taken it. Are you going to punish him?
Whether I do or not is my business, not yours.
I didn't think you would. It's always the same thing. Poor James. He's been through a lot. You have to...
His parents died. You know, I mean, it's kind of... jerky thing that Albert's kind of saying right now, but all right.
Understand him. Be nice to him.
He's part of our family.
That isn't my fault.
Albert, you wanted him to have a home with us just as much as I did.
Well, I didn't know it'd be like this. Taking my things, hanging around me all the time. I wish he'd never come to live with us in the first place.
Albert! Good thing Laura and Carrie didn't feel that way when you first came to live with us.
It's kind of a messed up thing to say, I think. I mean, I get it. It's a very heated moment.
Mm-hmm. It's also slightly erroneous because in Fagin, Laura made it very clear that she felt that Albert was getting preferential treatment.
Yeah, definitely. Those moments, but... At the end of that, though, you know, there is a reuniting.
That there is.
Yeah, so I just feel as though how many times are we going to remind Albert that he's an outsider? Because so far it's been twice in this episode. I don't know. And we're seasons into his character. Very. I mean, I don't know. It's... just seems to me a little bit insensitive towards the character. Albert goes up to the loft and, you know, this would be what I would want, is to just be left alone. Like, don't even talk to me, you little thief. The music is just so funny.
I'm going to save and buy you a new one.
I don't want a new one. I don't even want to talk to you. Just leave me alone, will you?
It's not that big of a deal. Like, I that's another thing. I'm just like, just relax about this. This is, there are worse things that could happen.
Yeah, but when you're 14 years old, that's a big thing.
Yeah, no, you're right. I just, well, another big thing is that when you are maybe 10 years old, you run away from your little sister, she comes running into town crying.
Cassandra, what's wrong?
James ran away.
Ran away?
Yes, he just stopped and hugged me tight and said he had to go away. And for me to be a good girl, he gave me this.
Albert, take this to Pa.
He runs to Almanzo, and Almanzo's like, he went to, I forget where he says that he went to.
Went to Sleepy Eye.
Oh, Sleepy Eye was doing a Sleepy Eye run. And all of a sudden, Albert is kind of taking the role of older brother, which I think is sweet. This is a nice little moment between him and Ma.
I don't deserve to be in your family. I don't want to ruin it for my sister, so I have to leave. Thanks for loving me, James.
I better go after him.
Where will you look?
He follows me around all the time. I'll just look where I go. It's my fault he ran off. Let me try to find him. He's my brother.
All of a sudden, he's your brother. So I thought that was very sweet. It's like, all right, we're taking a real change here. No, I did want to just mention, Jeannie, that you're an author. So I wanted to know if you could maybe give us a summary of what your book is about and where we can look for it. Because you've told me about it in the past. I just, I would love you to, you know, just kind of talk about it for a few moments.
Okay. Well, the book is titled Beauty from Ashes. It's, the title comes from Isaiah chapter 61, verse 3, saying that God will make beauty from ashes. It's narrated by a woman who has been out of a really horrible marriage for several years, and her friend, since the ink was finally dry on the divorce papers, has been dragging her to every Catholic singles event in Brooklyn.
Mm, right.
And then her friend finds out about a Catholic singles cruise. And at that point, Hannah knows that resistance is an exercise in futility and just says, okay, sign me up. And she's not looking for love. She thinks that it's something that happens to other people, but it's passed her by. Then she meets someone on the cruise, and wouldn't you know it, he's from Brooklyn. And she, despite her misgivings, she finds herself falling for him. The only fly in the ointment is she doesn't know that she's being stalked.
Right. So it becomes this thriller type of situation.
Yeah. Part romance, part psychological suspense.
And what is the title again?
It's Beauty from Ashes. It's available only through Amazon. I self-published through Amazon because there's a lot of Christian fiction out there, but there's not a lot of markets for Catholic fiction.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like a really worthwhile read, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes, of course. And
oh gosh, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and I know that you're continuing this path of writing, and I think it's a really admirable thing, and it's such a goal. So many people have, and they never really take themselves up on the opportunity to write a book. So I think that's great.
It took me 40 plus years before I got up the nerve to write an entire book. And just briefly, ever since I knew what books were and that people wrote books, I wanted to be one of those people.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of discouragement along the way. And the encouragement that I got came from a really unusual place. I had to write an email to a broker and to a coworker of mine regarding something that happened with a client that we all worked with. I'm not going to get into it here because I don't like discussing my clients. I think that confidentiality applies in the insurance business as well as anywhere else.
Right. Well, I mean, on the topic of the book itself, though, it's so your inspiration came from
the reaction of a coworker to an email that I wrote to her. I was so angry about the situation. When I get angry, I get funny.
Mm-hmm.
And she read the email and started laughing. She said, I'm sorry. I know it's a serious thing, but Jeannie, you really need to start doing this professionally.
Right.
And I thought, maybe I do.
Yeah, so she saw that, and it resonated with her, and you know, maybe that was like the seed that was needed, so that you could, you know, take it to the next level and start doing it in a larger format.
Yeah, so I decided to kind of stretch my legs a bit by writing a piece of fan fiction. I know at my age I'm too old for that, but it was really more a psychological study into all characters, Albert Ingalls.
Mm-hmm.
And I set it up on Facebook on a fan fiction site, and I got a lot of positive feedback. So I went and shared it on my own page. A lot more positive feedback.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, maybe it's time to tackle something bigger.
Well, I'm glad that you took it to the point where you completed an entire novel. So I think that's awesome. And it must be a really great feeling to have your book on a bookshelf and have that. You know, it'll always be there, you know?
Yeah, knowing that people have soft cover copies or copies in their e-readers.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I think that's awesome. And yeah, I look forward to seeing where you take your entire writing career from this point on. Laura Ingalls Wilder did not write until she was in her 60s. Or yeah, was not published until she was in her 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take that as an inspiration.
Yeah, I realized that after the book was published that she was in her 60s when she first got published.
One of the things that always brings us back is when you're trying to run away from a situation and somebody's pulling you back. Just like Albert when he tracks James down.
Mm-hmm.
So he's looking almost everywhere, which looks like he's looking almost nowhere, because he basically finds him what appears to be 300 feet away from the house, it looks like. Essentially tackles James to the floor, which I just think is really kind of hilarious.
That was an impressive tackle, too.
Yeah, well, he does play football. Remember, there's that whole the football team episode.
Oh, but, yes.
Here we go. Whoa.
Let me go!
I just want to talk to you.
I'm not going back.
I'm not going to make you. I just want to know why you ran away.
Because I don't fit in. I do bad things.
James is really just pity partying himself, in my opinion, at this point. He's not... he got caught. I mean, that's really that's the crux of it. He got caught, and he's embarrassed, and he thinks things are going to change now. He feels as though he's really disappointed everybody. He thinks that Albert hates him. And I think that's what he's really kind of going through. So yeah. He decides to run away, and I think in one of the more clever type of things, Albert says, well, if you're going to run away, I'm going to run away too, which I think is cute, and Albert probably thinks it is really cute too, until this kind of stuff starts happening.
Everybody's always in a hurry.
Talking about what a city is like.
You won't know anybody there, and nobody wants to know you. People never really take the time to say hello or care about each other.
Why not?
Too busy. Folks aren't nice like Ma and Pa. You probably won't even find a place to sleep.
Where'd you sleep?
Sometimes alleys or rubbish bins. No, that's in the summer. It's going to be winter soon. Going to be cold. But at least won't be crowded, huh?
So he goes on and on and explains how the city is this filthy, terrible, living on the streets type of situation. And Albert thinks he's going to be able to scare him straight, but he doesn't. It seems as though, if anything, James is even more motivated to just not go back. Especially now that Albert is with him. So his plan backfires for the moment, which I think is a cute way, because we see on Albert's face, like, all he wants to do is go back. He's like, I didn't think this through. I think the cruel part here is that Ma and Cassandra have no idea that Albert and James are running away together. And the sun has fallen, and Pa's not back. And it's just one of those things where it's just very, very scary. It's starting to rain outside.
Starting to?
Yeah. Well, Ma looks out the window. And
out there.
Yeah. And we get a shot of Albert and James, and they're under a wagon, and they found some level of shelter.
And the look on Albert's face
yeah.
is priceless.
He's like, oh my God, what did I get myself into?
Actually, he's got a look on his face like Oliver Hardy. This is a fine mess you've gotten us into,
kind of. Yeah, I'd see that. He also is kind of like, I can't even touch my face. It's just so full of scruff.
That Ma and Pa worried sick.
Yeah.
You sure you don't want to go back?
No. I'd really catch it if I did.
No, you wouldn't. I mean, it's my fault anyway. If there's any punishment, I'd tell him to give it to me.
You'd do that for me?
Sure I would. You'd do the same for me, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but...
All right.
But I've made up my mind. And I'm not going back.
And Albert's foiled again. Your plan's not working, kid.
Yeah, the look on his face, well, it looks like he would like to say some expletives that I don't think existed at that particular time.
Oh, I think he knows them, though. He did, you know, he did live under stairs for a pretty large portion of his childhood. They find a house in the middle of nowhere, this huge house. And they decide that they're just going to go into the house and start a fire, right? Now, this is where it could have been a Halloween episode, easily. I mean, again, this is October 19th, 1981. Would not have been difficult to just turn this into a Halloween episode.
And this is one of my weird observations. The house looks strangely like the house that it housed the school for the blind.
Yeah, or Hanson's house, or a number of there.
So if Albert were to start a fire in there, it wouldn't have been the first time.
Oh boy, I didn't think of that. That's a good, very good point.
I know, that's kind of mean of me.
But at the same time, true. Very true. But definitely a weird house, and it's a house they never saw before. And they're walking through it, and we get the theremin sound. Theremin is an instrument. It's an electronic instrument that you play with just keeping your hands away from two sets of antennas. It just works on based upon the distance of your hands. Very, very interesting rabbit hole to go down if you type in theremin playing on YouTube. Here we go. And this just goes on and on. They're going through the creepy house, and finally they get to a point where they're starting to get comfortable at this point. And it's exactly the wrong time to get comfortable because...
Hey, there's some old empty crates. We could bust them up.
Good idea.
And a man jumps out. He can't even hear it. And he just, it's like Santa Claus, jumps out holding a rifle. What you doing here?
You know.
What are you doing here, creepo? Put on a light.
You know, if those boys didn't have wet pants before they got in, they do now.
100%. This guy, and the guy's like, just jumping out. Like, what are you doing? Just standing around holding your gun? Why doesn't he have a fire going on? There's a lot of questions here. But
who behind a stack of crates.
Yeah.
Holding a shotgun.
Yeah, it's definitely weird. I believe it's Mr. Tibbs.
Mm-hmm, Horace Tibbs.
Yeah, and he, very nice guy. He takes them in. You know, he's nice enough to not shoot them.
Mm-hmm.
He goes on to learn that they're running away. Charles comes home wearing a raincoat. And I was like, oh my goodness, raincoat in 1881? So I looked into it, and apparently there were raincoats, first sold in 1824, and they were waterproof, and they were made out of a rubberized fabric. And I'm trying to figure out what rubberized fabric means, and it might be that they just took something like cotton or wool and poured hot rubber on it and to let it cool. I'm not 100% sure. But it's called Macintosh.
I've heard that expression before. My father uses that expression for raincoats.
Rubberized?
Macintosh.
Oh, Macintosh. Oh, that's interesting. It might be a brand for all I know. Not really sure, but the company was eventually taken over in the 1920s by Dunlop. So, of course, Dunlop being a pretty popular brand when it comes to rubber.
Yeah, my father-in-law worked for the Dunlop Tire Factory in Birmingham for many, many years.
Oh, okay. So and of course, they probably produce more than just tires. They produce a plethora of wonderful rubberized items. Rubberized.
Probably.
Yeah.
And I'll have to ask him the next time I speak with him.
Hmm.
They got my interest piqued.
The stranger starts telling them all stories about how, they tell him their story, that they're running away. And the man is nice enough to make them some grub. They're sitting around a nice warm fire, finally. I'm surprised that he doesn't know Charles Ingalls. Charles Ingalls is super famous everywhere, really. How far can this really have been? You know, how far could they have really walked? But
maybe a mile, 2 miles?
Yeah, seriously. It's like in the dark? Come on. But here they are, they're sitting and they're trying the old man's soup.
There's salt if you need it.
Oh no. It's real good.
Sure is. I never tasted soup like it.
It's an old recipe of my wife's. Not many folks making muskrat soup no more.
And their faces stone. And, of course, a muskrat is like a rat. Like a rat. Like a sewer rat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And kids usually are not too keen about trying unusual foods.
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah.
I'm speaking from experience. I was at a picnic once where it was several families, and we were all sharing food, and somebody gave me a plate of rice with some kind of seafood, and it was so good.
Mm.
And I was on my third helping, and my stepmother looked at me and said, "Are you enjoying that?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "You know there's octopus in it, right?" I looked at her, and I was like,
"I eat octopus, though,
you're pulling my leg." She flipped over a piece of the seafood. It had suction cups.
And that was the first time you had it? Or was it the last time?
That was the first time and the last time. I really hadn't had the opportunity to try it again.
Yeah, but when it's made properly, you know, it's a very good it's a good dish, depending on how it's made.
Oh, and this was.
Good. You know, you should definitely take that as a, I believe skingili is octopus. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great food. You just have to have the nerve to ignore what it looks like when it's alive or when it's dead.
Skingili I've never had, but I've had calamari.
Yeah, calamari rings, right? Those are tubes that you cut. And
yeah, I just, these days I do ask before I try something because I do have a couple food allergies And I'm diabetic.
Right. So you got to be a little bit more cautionary with your choices.
But I'm still willing to try almost anything, especially if it's something that might be beneficial for my health.
Sure. Maybe muskrat. It's probably low in fat, high protein, very lean, and probably very delicious.
You probably just have to clean it really well.
But this is what he says, because once they learn it's muskrat, they kind of ditch it while the guy is out getting, I believe, salt. So this is
at least they were polite enough to wait until he'd left the room.
Got plenty. We'll dig down into that pot. Got some good chunks of rat meat down there.
Rat meat. Nothing quite like rat meat. Oh, boy.
Ew.
So they all talk about stuff. We hear the old man's story and how it was his big whole house was full of kids. And I believe he said 14 children.
Yeah.
And it's a cool house and everything, you know. It's a really beautiful house. And he just talks about how at one time it was busy, but he just doesn't see his kids anymore. They moved. And we feel a little bit bad for him, I guess, right? We don't know what this guy's story is. It's getting flashbacks of My Ellen. You know, it's like, can you run into the basement for me real quick? They both get their own rooms to stay in, which I think is also very strange to stay in a stranger's house separate. But James is just standing there alone in a room. And so it's very visual here. But it's very dark. There's no oil in the lanterns. The only light really is just, you know, twilight and, I don't know, like lightning bolts. And it's pouring out. Charles and Caroline are just really nervous, and it's all very tense. Caroline finally but she comes up with a really beautiful idea to solve the issue of not having space. And I don't know, I just think it's the most logical thing.
We should add on.
Huh?
We should add on.
Whoops, I was going to say, you mean add on more kids? Like, let's have another kid, Charles. Oh, my God.
With the adoption at this point.
Oh, boy, too much.
Remember, she's gone through the change.
Oh, that's right, I forgot that. By this point, we've spoken to Doc about the change.
Yeah, and you want to go raid the orphanage and Sleepy Eye?
Yeah, well, we could. Tomorrow morning, we'll go first thing.
I got that back wall, then the boys would have a room, and the girls could have the loft.
Oh, Carolyn, we don't need any more room.
Charles Ingalls, just day before yesterday, you said that there wasn't any room in this house.
I was talking about furniture, not children.
Maybe we can call up Uncle Chris, and he can come and blow out that wall and get to work. Add a room or two, sir.
Yes.
Chris won't complain.
No, and I don't think Caroline would voice too much opposition either.
No, her hair would come down very quickly.
Besides, it doesn't make any difference how big or small a place is. It's what happens on the inside that counts.
What's he talking about?
I know that. They are getting older.
All right, I'll add on if that's what you want.
But I don't think they ever add on. He agrees to it. I don't think they ever do it. I think he's going down the path of your husband.
I think so, too.
I'm just kidding around.
Well, if Caroline's anything like me, if she gets sick and tired of him saying, okay, we'll add on, and doesn't do it, she might go and buy the lumber and borrow his tools and start building it her own self.
Right. You watch a couple of episodes of something on the DIY channel. Next thing you know, you own a power drill.
Well, why the DIY channel? Nowadays, you can find just about anything you want on YouTube.
Yeah, you know, but that's kind of what I mean. Like, you get inspired by one simple thing. It's like, oh, I could do this. We're putting it in a jacuzzi. So mm-hmm. we have shutters slamming out outside, and City Boy James has no idea what that is. So he comes screaming to his older brother.
Albert!
What?
Do you hear that noise?
It's a shutter banging in the wind.
Oh.
Idiot.
Can I sleep in here with you?
Yeah, come on.
They go on to talk about how it's just funny how they're finally given the opportunity to have their own space, but what happens? You know, this terrible storm happened. You know, I'm going to play some of this. I think it's nice. Them basically talking about what's happened and what to do next, because this is really starting to show them that this sucks. You know, this is awful.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what you were saying about taking all the blame if we went back?
Yeah.
And you said if there was any punishment, you'd take it?
Yeah.
Well, do you still feel that way?
Sure. You want to go back?
I sure do. How about you?
I never really wanted to leave in the first place.
Let's leave at first light.
Sounds good to me, little brother.
First, let's kill this guy and take his money. No, that doesn't happen.
Now, you get some sleep.
So it's very sweet. I think like they're like, all right, enough of this.
Yeah.
We played our game.
I think it's funny, though, that then he says, I hope there isn't any punishment.
Exactly. Yeah, he's. Let me see if I can find that real quick.
I sure hope there's any punishment.
So, we, now, if I ran away from home as a kid of pretty much any age, my parents wouldn't be happy to see me coming back. I mean, they'd be probably relieved that I'm alive. But it would not be like, hey, fellas, how you doing? Let's go eat breakfast. But that's kind of what happens in the Ingalls home. So let's play that.
Down in the back.
Hi.
You're all right.
And it should be like, whoop, psh, psh, psh. Pa, no.
That may have happened after breakfast.
Maybe. But they have their little dialogue here, and it's sweet.
You had us scared to death, you know that?
Oh! James, what in the world got into you?
I just got the feeling bad. I know how crowded the house is.
Wait until you
after breakfast.
Well,
it's not going to be anymore. Charles and I talked it over. We're going to add on. There's going to be plenty of room.
That's right.
If you listen closely to Karen Grossley's recording, there's an echo, as though it's recorded in a studio, which is very often what they do on these outside shots, because the audio is always inconsistent and awful. But here, if you listen closely to her, you'll hear it. It sounds like she's in the hallway.
Well, you don't have to do that. It's fine the way it is, really. Isn't that right, Albert?
That's right, little brother.
James!
I'm going to go back just so you can hear it, Caroline.
Bad. I don't know how crowded the house is.
Well, it's not going to be anymore. Charles and I talked it over. We're going to add on. There's going to be plenty of room.
That's right.
Well, you don't have to do that. It's fine the way it is, really. Isn't that right, Albert?
That's right, little brother.
James! Hi. Hi.
Hey, well, I don't get it. First it's too crowded, then it's not too crowded.
It's a long story, Paul. Can I tell you over breakfast?
Sure you can.
Thanks.
Glad you're home.
Right after I give you a whooping, at this point, you would kind of expect to have Laura say something like, you know, James and Cassandra were to grow up and just love living life in the little house.
True.
And everything was just great, and they ate as much bacon as they could possibly eat.
But they ate it standing up because they had that whooping.
Yeah, they had that whooping. But all in all, I thought this was an enjoyable episode. This was a real filler episode. But I do think that they could have really kind of changed it a little bit to turn it into a Halloween-centric episode. What do I know?
Yeah, certainly that house would have lent itself to it.
Yeah, the next episode, of course, the one that would air right before Halloween, is Dark Sage. So really, if you flip these two, it would have made a little bit more sense. But again, what do I know?
Yeah, they could have also expanded the time at that house just for the creep factor.
Yeah, or it could have been the haunted house in the beginning, and they're like, "Oh, you can't go to that house," and all of a sudden they're in this storm, and they're like, "It's the only place where we can go to."
I know how many horror movies have started out with, "I dare you," or "I bet you X amount of money to spend one night in that house."
Yeah, stuff like that. It would have been fun. It would have been funny to add have a little bit more of that going on, but I think it's too late. I think we're about, what is this, 40 some odd years too late.
Yeah.
Make any changes.
Yeah. And I don't think Matthew Labrato and Jason Bateman would be too keen on doing something like that.
I can't imagine them at all doing it, but it would be fun to watch. I don't even want to play around with LARPing on an idea. But Jeannie Mitchell, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to do this tonight. And I'll put a link again to your book, and people can follow your career. And I'm just so happy that we finally connected and got you on the show.
And I thank you for having me. But before we go, I just want to give a shout out to my nephews, William and James. And also my friend Penny's two daughters, Eleni and Diane, whom I love like my own nieces.
Eleni? Or
Eleni.
Oh, I love that name. It's a great name.
Yeah. And Diane.
Hi, Diane. I like your name, too. I like everybody's name. But when your name is Mark, things seem to be more exotic when you have a, you know. Everybody else's name is so much more fancy. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider supporting Walnut Grovecast by heading over to patreon.com/walnutgrovecast.